Welcome to Random
Sum. Oh, easy to podcast where three friends must be silent in order to survive.
As always, I am your host, Zach, and join with me is my fellow co-host,
Zach.
And
Steven.
And I just woke up from a nap.
Your day is a bunch of highs and lows. You are never in the middle. You are either peak energy or no energy.
What was it, like 3 o'clock? I'm like, I have so much energy. I'm so high at the
and
gym
then,
right
and
now.
And then I come home and you're like, I'm going to take a nap.
God. I blame the pizza and the Cold Stone after my nap or from before my nap. I just didn't feel like cooking. So, you know, smoothie and a pizza with sriracha cover all over it.
Yes, because that was a good idea. Because
you know what jalapenos need? Sriracha.
I just wanted to feel again.
How could you feel anything after that?
I feel many
things. He felt it in the moment, and then nothing.
I feel many things, especially regret. So, we're pretty light on news this week. I don't know if you guys took a look. I know C2E2 is happening right now. From that event, there's only been like one or two major big announcements, yeah, and PAX East is also going on.
I haven't heard anything out of PAX East. I checked. I didn't see anything.
You didn't hear the greatest news ever from PAX East?
No.
Final Fantasy 15 is never going to be final.
It will. The game that will never stop coming out. I'm convinced that once Tabata leaves to go work on his other studio, that's it. They're done.
Maybe.
You would think. Since, you know,
Nomura's
like
gonna come back and he's gonna do a DLC. He's gonna do
it's
the musical
my
number.
Turn, the belt DLC.
So this news is coming from us from Game Revolution, fresh out of PAX East. At the Final Fantasy 15 panel, there was a surprise news that we'd be getting our hands on a quartet of new stories involving villain Arden, Aranea. It's been so
Arania.
Long.
Arania Knights.
Luna Freya. And a second go around with Noctis. Completing that in 2018 would be additions to Comrades, which is actually going to be its own standalone game now for free on online stores. So the four DLCs. Episode 1, Arden, The Conflict of the Sage. The story portrays the struggles of Arden, witness the resentment he harbored towards Lucius for over 2,000 years in his clash with the Astrals. So we might be getting the story where he
becomes
up,
a god.
Yeah, Ifrit, and fights against them leading up to the final battle. Because again, Noctis was chilling in the cocoon for decade plus, so we don't know what he was doing. Episode side story, Aranea. The beginning of the end, a side story about the Star Scourge depicted from Niflheim's perspective. The final day of the Empire turns out to be Aranea's worst day. Episode 2, Luna Freya, The Choice of Freedom. The story is about Luna's fate, which not even death can set her free from. Her battle to save the one she loves overturns the destiny dealt to the Lucian King. And episode 3, Noctis, The Final Strike. Parting ways with the Astrals, Noctis embarks upon his final battle in order to attain the ideal future for all his people. All four episodes, 3 plus 1 side story, are definitely set to arrive in 2019 and will contain an alternate what-if non-canning ending for the fans who felt burned by the original ending of Final Fantasy 15. I don't think I felt burnt by that ending.
I thought
it was fine. I thought it was a beautiful ending.
For the story that they told, it was
again,
very
everybody
fitting.
Universally agreed. Chapter 13, I'm like, this fucking sucks.
Yeah,
like, this was not
it.
Good.
And they fixed it. And then chapter 15
and then
comes
the game closes out fine from there.
I think it's just like this is like the first Final Fantasy game that
is essentially a game
everyone dies.
Service.
Allegedly. Like, it's just the darkest ending.
The darkest timeline. Everyone's going to have goatees.
They did have the darkest timeline, so.
Like, yeah, 10 was okay. Aaron and Tidus were revealed to be dreams.
Oron.
Dude, it's been a while, okay?
It's been a while.
And they were revealed to be dreams, but, you know, Tidus came back. So, happy
ending. Which was still the most, like, confusing ending for little me playing that. I was like... Wait, so Aron and Tidus, Our dreams of Sin, who is Tidus's dad
from thousands of years
who,
ago,
who came to this world and went on a quest with Yuna's dad. What?
But again, it's like, I guess a lot of people just wanted something happier. And I guess what's really cool too is that the three DLCs, being episode one, episode three, all connect with this thematic piece of they are going to fight the Astrals, or they're going to be with the Astrals at some point.
Yeah, that does seem something that I was just like, oh yeah, by the way, there's these fucking gods floating around and we talk to them and then they get upset.
That's the best way to put it, I guess.
I'm just reminded of the Leviathan fight. It's like, oh yeah, Luna has to go sacrifice herself and, you know, quell this god.
Yeah. It makes me wonder.
There's gods.
It's very cool to see all these games, like, those three central characters. Like, Luna Freya got so much, like, promotional material in the game. It's like, I gotta look for Luna Freya.
There she is! What? What do you mean she's dead?
Like, I know all of the side supplemental materials, like the Brotherhood anime, the manga, and a few others, show, like, that relationship between Noctis and Luna Freya, but we never really got it in the game. So I'm really hoping to see more interaction between those two characters.
Yeah. I expect more flashbacks. Of course, the obvious joke of all these episodes is Episode Noctis. Isn't that the fucking game?
Episode Noctis 3. And we already got one alternate ending with Episode Ignis, which was really cool.
That's true.
Though I'm just really curious to see, like, is this going to be, like, everyone's perfect timeline?
Maybe.
To be like, everyone survived. Noctis and Luna Freya united all of Lucius.
Fine. Nothing bad ever happened. Ever.
You know, they turn in the latest update, they actually turned Lucius into like a fully playable area too.
What?
Yeah.
Again, where the fuck was this all?
They added a new boss fight too, right before Ifrit.
It makes me wonder, like, where's this all like, we could have made this, like, we could have probably delayed the game even further to get all this stuff in, or was this just post-development, like, thoughts of, like, this is what we could probably do to make this better, and then just update it?
It's really interesting, just because we live in the modern day and age of video games, that nothing is set in stone ever. It's like
Nintendo games.
Well, even Nintendo games, like,
I mean, they had a DLC, but it's like, the games are still good without it, though. The DLCs are supplemental.
It's true.
It's not like we're adding in pieces of the game that should have been there. Or shouldn't be there. We probably needed to be there.
Looking at you, Motorcycle, in Breath of the Wild, you needed to be there all along. The slowest thing ever.
Is it slow?
No. The only thing that's faster than it is the legendary horses.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, everyone expected it to be the fastest thing. But it was like, all right, gonna go off this jump.
Think. There's literally only one thing in the game that's faster than it.
Exactly. Supplemental.
But think of it. Think about a world where Final Fantasy 15 got delayed for what?
10 years.
When did it come out? 2016. Yeah. Imagine if it came out later this year with all of this content that they've added now. Like, I feel like the game, like, everyone's like, okay, yeah. Like, when it came out, I was like, yeah, it's a good game. Not great, but pretty good.
Well, think about, like, what was it? I think we saw, like, the first hints of this in Final Fantasy 13 2 when they kept adding those DLCs prior to Lightning Returns coming out. It's like,
yeah,
look.
A little bit.
Colosseum DLCs. Look, we changed the combat system entirely.
I've never played the updated one.
Ah, oh, it's so fun. Like, you just play as Lightning fighting against the big bad from 13-2, and it's just 13, or it's Lightning Returns as a combat system, as like, we're testing this.
Yeah, as if throwing for a loop when I played, I'm like, wait, what's this combat system?
And everyone's like, oh, this is gonna be the combat system for 7, the remake. Yeah, that's not gonna come out anytime soon.
But I mean, it's a pretty solid combat system, so it would work.
I enjoy it.
It would work.
And I mean, 15 improved upon it, and then we also got the Comrades DLC, which adds more combat
styles.
Yeah,
it makes me wonder if, like, how much of the 15 development are they going to just transfer over into 7's, like, mechanics and the system itself. What was like, it? Is 7 going to be like this open world runaround game, or are they going to stick to it being a remake of just still it's having some supposed to be turn-based.
Open world?
Well, I mean,
and the combat is also like similar to 15.
I am curious to see if they're going to keep it episodic.
I don't know.
That was like their big thing. That was the plan. It's going to be episodic. Like, didn't they say? What if it doesn't?
Didn't they say the first episode was supposed to be out this year or something?
Oh God, I doubt it at this point.
We just got a release here for Kingdom Hearts 3.
Square Enix's like development studios are the studios of like, hey. Where's your game that you've been working on for the last 3 years? And then Kingdom Hearts. Perpetually in development.
Like, oh my God, when's it coming out? In development. Well, shit.
Well, at least you didn't...
Episode 1 coming soon.
At least you didn't give us a date and then delay it.
Episode 1 coming soon. Season pass now available.
Thanks, well, there's man. There's so few game. There's like maybe one studio being Rockstar that can get away with just delaying their games. Everyone was like, yeah, okay, fine. No problem.
Well, Rockstar is also the game studio that they have a game that just never stops coming out.
It's true.
Like, granted, GTA 5 is done. GTA Online.
Never done.
Like, they just added more DLC.
Yeah. It's like, hey, has anyone heard anything about Red Dead Redemption 2? Here's some more free stuff, GTA 5.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, but where's Red Dead?
Here's have flying cars. Have you played
the Doomsday heist with the jetpacks?
Now, what if I were to tell you Flying DeLorean?
Red Dead what now? With GTA Online, like, GTA Online has a story, allegedly. It's supposed to take place...
Isn't it pretty much just a heist?
Well, it's supposed to take place before GTA 5. All the heists take place before GTA 5. And then they do a time skip. Like, you're driving around... And then the radio goes, man, I can't believe it's 2018. Neither can you. And it's like, but wait, it's supposed to be like 2014. Huh. So like, that's how they, again, it's so bizarre that Rockstar has like this continuous timeline of things that happen. Because it's like, yeah, we're all these supercars and flying cars in GTA 5. Franklin could have used those. And then they're like, nope, time skip. That's why Franklin doesn't have them. But why isn't Franklin in the online mode? Doesn't matter. You know, depending on your ending of who dies.
Oh, here's the... there was something that people have been waiting for that got announced this week.
Walking Dead's final season?
Well, no, that's been known. Spider-Man The Game, though, coming out September 7th exclusively on PS4. It's finally announced.
Yeah.
And Yuri Lowenthal is the voice of Spider-Man.
What? Sasuke?
What? Simone from Gurren Lagann?
What? Neil from Camp Camp?
What? Mercury Black from Ruby?
What? Spider-Man?
What? Teenage Ben Tennyson?
What? Peter Parker?
The more gameplay I see from this, the more excited I am. And just the fact that they're kind of adapting one of Dan Slott's storylines for the game is really cool. Plus, we know there's going to be some supporting characters. We've already seen Miles. We know Mr. Negative is going to be there, so we might see Cloak and Dagger.
Wasn't there a rumor Spider-Gwen might show up somehow? Or there might be like a hint at it?
I hope. It'd be kind of neat.
Just like... one of those things where, like, if you look at the sun at exactly this point in the game, you'll see a flip.
You'll see a portal.
And the spider person will flip out of it.
Well, it makes me wonder, like, what else they're going to adapt. Like, are they going to go full balls to the wall and just be like, Spider-Verse?
They could. I mean, they're just calling it Marvel's Spider-Man.
They could easily set up a franchise with it.
Mm-hmm. Because I think Spider-Punk is one of the pre-ordered DLC costumes. Hobby Brown, the one with the jean vest and spikes on his head.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the hype that this game's already receiving, I hope it's good. I have to have the slight skepticism that, like...
I mean, it's Insomniac doing it. Like, they made such a good system with...
Infamous?
Not Infamous. Fuck, the game that nobody played on Xbox.
Sunset Overdrive?
Yes.
I played it. I enjoyed it.
I played an hour of it.
It seems like this is the perfect studio to do a game where you're swinging across a city.
Oh, wait. Sunset Overdrive, also Yuri Lowenthal.
Oh.
Yeah. But just seeing the combat, it just makes me like, yep, this is a Spider-Man game.
But for real, though, it had... what I noticed in the first E3 trailer, it already has Arkham Asylum syndrome, where their hits so fucking hard, they're dead.
At so the you at, should be dead. At
best crippled.
Someone on Reddit already took the gameplay from PAX East and then overlaid it with Mortal Kombat bone breaking sequences. It's like, and you're gonna grab these boards and just smack the dude. It's like, ka-doosh. It's like, and then you're gonna web this guy and then slam him on the ground, broken neck.
Well, it's like when you look at the even just the first trailer, he takes full on steel beams and slams a dude with them. You're dead. How hard you got hit with those? Fucking dead. Again, at best, quadriplegic.
This is one of those games, though, that I know I'm just going to be like...
Don't talk to me.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to be swinging around the city and like, oh, look, people are in danger. Flip. Spider-Man.
You're going to be the guy who's just taking selfies with everyone.
MJ's going to be in the game, and I do really enjoy the fact that, like Steven said, like, yeah, he takes these steel bars and just bashes someone. I'm like, yeah, dude, environmental combat, that's so cool. It's like Injustice, but open world.
So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, all three of us are going to be playing it when it comes
out. The one game that we'll be okay with having three copies of in the house.
But which one of us is getting... There's three different pre-order levels. Just saying. None of them, one of them comes with the Spider-Man statue. Just kind of like, I'm almost like,
I don't know. Just, I haven't trusted like any video game statues as of late.
But I really like the suit.
Like Marvel vs. Capcom.
Everybody is shafted by that.
Yeah, like the Easter eggs and then the weird fucking statues.
The plastic statues.
When you're paying like 60 extra bucks for all of the Infinity Stones, quote unquote, and the statues, they're not going to be the best quality.
But you would expect something better than Easter eggs.
Yeah. But real quick, speaking of statues, just saw that they are doing memorial busts for Power Rangers, one-for-one statues busts. So like the head and kind of the top of the torso area. How much do you think?
500.
350.
Okay. $900.
What the fuck? Suddenly don't feel bad. We're contemplating buying a $900 bust. I suddenly would not feel bad about getting that $300 Makoto statue.
Yeah. Well, it was on sale for $300.
Oh. So it's probably like $400.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
They're so good quality.
I just really
Spider-Man
stat. The suit from this game looks so cool. Like,
it's pretty cool.
It's
nice that they have it's a unique design.
Yeah, especially with everything that's been happening right now in the series with issue 798, Peter's going up against Red Goblin, you know, Norman Osborn with the Carnage symbiote and all the scalpers are kind of like, but not really.
I love how John had to put a sign. It was like, only what you're only allowed one variant of this.
Yeah.
No more.
But it's, but at the end of the issue for 798, Peter, you know, Osborn gives him an ultimatum. It's like, look, I'm not going to kill you. I don't care about Peter Parker. I care about Spider-Man. And if you aren't going to be Spider-Man, no one has to get hurt.
Which we all know how this is going to go. Peter can't give up being Spider-Man ever.
Exactly. But it shows, like, the last page is, like, Peter burning the Spider-Man costume on a flagpole so Red Goblin can leave him alone. It's like, I have to do something different. And everyone's like, oh shit, he's gonna go black suit.
Oh my god.
Kid Arachnid.
CB Belusky. I don't know. But at C2E2, he was showing preview pages from issue 800. And it's, sure enough, Spidey in the black suit. And it's not necessarily the Venom suit. It's just like
a black version of his suit.
Yeah. And
it's
everyone
like the
Miles knows.
Suit almost.
No, it's just the Venom suit, but it's cloth. So everyone's like, is he going to bond with the symbiote again? Is it just going to be the black suit? Because remember, he went black suit after Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
He also went black suit when he was married to MJ at one point.
Is that issue 300?
I think so. Well, no, issue 300 is the symbiote. Yeah, but whatever. So it's very much like everyone's like, oh, shit, we know he's serious because he's in the black suit. And Belusky also goes on. It's like, yeah, this is actually staying for a while. And everyone's like, oh, shit. He's going to be in the black suit for
the next
Nick Spencer's run.
It's gonna get dark.
I don't even think it's just. He's just so done with Osborn. Like Dancelot being the person who's like, "Yep, I'm part of the team that killed Osborn off, and I brought him back for my final hurrah."
And now I'm gonna have him, Peter, kill him.
It's very much like, you know, Snyder's last Batman story, with air quotes, was always a Joker story, yeah. And then it wasn't, and then it was a Joker story again, kind of. But, you know, it's going to be great. Comic books are cool, yo.
So the Spider-Man collector's edition, only $150.
Only.
I mean, the base deluxe edition is $80.
But what comes in it?
In the collector's edition, which one, the 150 or the 80?
80.
80 is just the game and the season pass. 150. Which the season pass they're calling The City That Never Sleeps, which will be 3 post-launch story chapters, new mission suits, and characters. The 150, you get the game, the season pass, a white spider sticker, a custom steelbook, a art book, and the statue.
Shit, they said steelbook.
Which, that's not even the official statue. It's the real statue is being revealed summer 2018. Wow. Probably when pre-orders actually go live.
I would hope for so.
It. They'd be like, look, statue, go buy it.
See, I just don't have enough time for physical media anyways. It's like, oh, it's out. Download. And it's going to be during the school year, so or I will most never of the time, buy it.
Download. Oh, look, it's pre-downloaded. Yay.
Download. What do I do now?
And it's a single player game, so we don't have to worry about the servers going down day one.
I think it's start like, story. Servers are down.
I think it comes out on a Friday too.
A lot of games are starting to come out on Friday,
which I am perfectly okay with.
Like God of War, which Steven's hyped for, pre-ordered. What? Shout out to you, Kratos. 420 just blazed on a Friday.
So many interesting things coming out on 420. There's that really fucked up human trafficking movie trailer we saw. Super Troopers 2.
Fuck yeah, Super Troopers 2.
Rampage?
Yes. Truth or Dare comes out the week before.
Truth or Dare.
Truth or Dare. You do the truth, you won't die. If you don't do the dare, you die.
That's not how the game works. They decide for you.
The game decides. It follows you.
Hey, man, It Follows was a good movie. Weird concept, good movie.
Yes, okay, Fuck Demon is one thing. A devil's game of Truth or Dare...
Where everybody just
loses. What was it that we were talking about to Jim at dinner last night? Like, every generation needs, like, a weird slasher.
A weird slasher series.
Yeah.
Like, we had Final Destination Scream. Or Scream. Well, Scream was, like, the tail end of, or the beginning of our generation. Like, we were more the Final Destination Saw generation.
And Saw's back for keeps. They're working on a new Saw movie.
Yay.
It's good. Like, it's actually a good like story. Those
movies, though,
it's torture porn.
I don't there like are some any that, of that.
That a little subtlety wouldn't hurt the series, where it's like, oh, look at this gruesome thing. Now focus on it. Instead, it could be like, oh, this trap does this. Pan away, blood splatter. A little, just like Cabin in the Woods did with the stoner kid, where it's like, oh no, he's dead, because they dragged him behind this hill that you can't see his death. Which made for the best reveal later.
What the twist?
Like, a little mystery isn't a bad thing in horror movies.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about the Saw movies. I just enjoy them.
You don't need to.
Like, I'm sure there's a YouTube edit out there that just takes all the torture porn out and is just the story.
So it'd be like 15 minutes?
Oh, no, that's an intricate story.
Don't need to go into the intricacies of the Saw franchise.
So once upon a time, there was a man with cancer.
We don't need to.
His name was Jigsaw.
We don't need to.
He thought people don't appreciate life enough.
No.
And he had a puppet named Billy. He also had a tricycle.
No.
And then he got an apprentice.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice, if you will. It was Mickey Mouse. They own the Saw franchise now, along with the rest of the world.
We're going to torture you.
It's the brooms. They just give you continuous splinters.
You don't appreciate life.
So, unsurprised to everyone, also at CTE2, Kari Payton was doing a spotlight panel on himself, you know, at being Ezekiel, as well as Cyborg, Aqualad, and many other characters.
And Shikasta.
It was announced, or at least he said on
Shikasta.
He said during his panel that all of the VO work for Young Justice is done.
Woo!
And don't they should be beating. On track for their late 2018 preview. Woo! So it was really funny because, so on Greg's website, s8.org, and it's a Gargoyles website. So on June 24th, 2017, Greg Jr. asks, what is a normal day working on Young Justice 3 like? From morning to evening, details, please. Greg responded on April 5th, 2018. There's really no such thing as a normal day. There are tons of, I suppose, normal tasks that need getting done, but it's not like I consistently write in the morning, record voices over lunch, and review Animax in the afternoon on a daily basis. If you're asking what all needs to get done, well, there's a ton that needs to get done. Keep in mind that we're on a sliding schedule where multiple episodes are being worked on in various stages all at one time. So, for example, today, as I write this, I had a meeting first thing in the morning to look at color backgrounds for episode 317. This was followed by Brandon and I reviewing the storyboard for episode 323. We were interrupted so Brandon can give notes on animation test at 4:310. Next, we're going over to WB Ranch to meet with our bosses, something we do every other Thursday. Then we'll come back to try and finish reviewing 323 storyboard. Contrast that with what we did yesterday. And I'm not going to read the rest of that, but it just hones in the fact that, yes, because something is being produced right now doesn't mean it's being produced week to week. No. It's all one giant. It's
just a giant project. They get done when they get done. Because some episodes are going to take less time than others, and they probably do it by scene-by-scene basis.
Yeah, look at Gundam Seed Destiny, where they reuse the same scene of Strike Freedom shooting.
We all know, yes, we've gone over this. It's because they ran out of money and they didn't have any animators, so.
Yeah, but so great regardless.
Also, fun fact. Love Live is keeping Sunrise alive, not fucking Gundam anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Love Live is way more popular, I would suppose, because Bandai Namco owns their merch, I think, for probably all the Gunpla.
Makes sense. Yeah, there was like a 20-minute video about the history of mecha anime and how it's in a super decline right now.
Well, I mean, there's only Gundam.
There's Gundam.
Darling
the Franks. Franks. I always catch myself, I'm like, fuck, I did it again. Even though I know it's Darling and the Franks, it just sounds weird to me.
So you knock your can over almost, and then you knock your water almost over.
Things.
I'm going to punch this glass next, and then the mic for good measure.
Let's see. Yeah.
What else happened at CTV2?
They had a Batman panel. They had all the Batman writers. They also announced that Jamie Rich, formerly of Vertigo, is now the group editor for the Batman titles. So I think this was because the previous editors got a promotion again. Snyder's former editor at Vertigo. I can't remember his name right now. But at the Batman panel, Tom King and Tony S. Daniel were going over what is going to happen in Batman 45, which is the next story arc here happening soon. Booster Gold goes back in time to prevent spoiler, not like, you know, Stephanie Brown spoiler, it's redacted on this NewsRama article, with disastrous consequences. DC Comics confirmed, poor and this Booster. Is from NewsRama, during their Batman panel at C2E2 convention, that Booster Gold will team up with Batman and Catwoman in April 18th, so actually like in 2 weeks now. Batman 45 will take place in an alternate world where Booster Gold has gone back in time to save Thomas and Martha Wayne and inadvertently prevents Bruce Wayne's birth. So This is a younger Booster Gold going back in time to prevent their deaths. And then there's another Booster Gold who's trying to stop his previous self. And then there's the third Booster Gold that's teaming up with Batman and Catwoman.
Oh my God.
Tom King, everyone.
Also, poor fucking Booster Gold. He just, every time he tries to do something to make things better, it just fucks up everything.
The story, Booster Shot in Action Comics was really well done and told, because Booster even tells Superman's like, I do this as an act. I'm the greatest hero you've never heard of for a reason, because if people found out who I really was, it would lead to dire consequences. And that issue actually killed Lois and General Lane, and then Booster rewinds time like by 60 seconds to save them, but Superman thinks he saved them.
Huh.
It's really heartbreaking that Booster's just like,
yep, this is my life.
Tell him. This is my life. So Tom King says it's Dick Grayson without Bruce Wayne and a lot of bullets. As previously solicited, Tony S. Daniel will pencil the arc in his return to the title following his New 52 run as writer and artist. Daniel confirmed at the panel that he will ink rather than the previously solicited inker Sonda Flore. So the full synopsis is Booster Gold has come to Gotham City and is enlisting Batman and Catwoman to go on a time-traveling mission to rescue Booster Gold. It seems the younger Booster Gold has gone back in time to kidnap an even younger version of himself to rescue his own past. Booster must pursue both of his previous incarnations through Batman's history to find out what is going on.
Yo, I heard you like Booster Gold.
I'm so excited.
Let no one give Barry Allen shit about changing timelines. Booster Gold is chasing a paradox of himself.
The start of a new story that will sow the seeds of the whole new
Barry Allen still at fault,
and also return of masterclass artist Tony S. Daniel. So the Batman that we see with all of the guns and the pouches, Rob Liefeld-esque, is Dick Grayson.
Huh.
I find it very weird that in every alternate future where everything goes horribly wrong, Batman has a gun. I'm just imagining the future where...
I want a future Batman Jason Todd with no guns.
I want Jason Todd to be a billionaire playboy philanthropist who donates all of his money to charity and creates a utopia. And he has orphanages.
Please let that happen. We have old lady Laura where everything went right. Let's have old man Jason where everything went right.
Batman, where are your guns? I don't use guns. You're future Jason Todd, aren't you?
Hold on a second here.
Wait. We're in a dystopian Gotham City. Batman needs guns. I never use guns. You're Jason, aren't you?
How do you know?
I am the knight.
It's like in the New 52 where Jason becomes a priest. Or in Flashpoint, he became a priest for Brother Blood. But side note.
Well,
semantics.
But like, so we now have an evil incarnation of Dick Grayson, Batman with guns. We had Tim Drake's savior, who had the gun that killed the Waynes. And we also had Damian Wayne, who sold his soul to Satan and has guns. We just need the future with pacifist Jason Todd.
Yes, please.
Jason, someone, are you going to go fight crime?
No.
So
I'm going to donate to charities out of the world, become a philanthropist. But what about the fighting crime? Never again.
So one of the... opening scenes too that they showed off at C2E2 is Hal Jordan killing himself. Like, you just see him bring the ring up to his head and then a flash, and then you see his body drop.
What the fuck?
Jesus.
Dark nihilistic Gotham. Booster Gold's gonna save the day.
The best Green Lantern.
Never heard of.
Just can't wait. Booster's gonna be so good.
You get your two favorite things in one issue, Batman and Booster Gold.
It's just like, you know, a month ago when I got Superman and Booster Gold. Booster Gold needs his own solo series, just like Catwoman does. So that was the other thing.
That was the one big question that everyone had when Rebirth started. It's like, where the hell's Catwoman? Where's her series?
And Genevieve Valentine did such a good job doing, like, mobster Catwoman.
Yeah.
So it was just such a bummer that went away. But now we have
Joelle Jones doing the writing and art.
And then, like, Laura Allred is doing colors. It's going to be so great.
Spinning out of the pages of Batman 50.
And
I assume is post-wedding then?
Yep. And they've even confirmed in, like, the next solicited arc that their wedding went off. And it's like, yay.
Yay. It actually happened.
But they also show terrible images, like Jamie Rich at the C2E2 panel posted. It's like, yep, their wedding's going to happen, but not without some friends. And then it's a picture of the Joker sideways staring. His gun is pointed through the mail drop box, staring into the room. I'm like, oh, God, why?
But I'm really hoping that the future issue that we got from the annual, right?
For
where it's old Bruce and Selina.
Yeah.
I just really hope that's, like, still the trajectory. Like, this isn't gonna, like, they're just gonna divorce after, like, two arcs or something.
Well, you know,
I pray that Tom King, like, this is his story and he's going to keep this, keep them together at least through his run.
They need to. And I feel like no other person is better for this job right now than Joel Jones and Laura Allred. They did Lady Killer, I think it was, for Aftershock or Image, one of the two. That series is just super phenomenal. So I'm really excited to see what they bring to the table. And I'm at Hall of Justice. I'm like, hey, John, I'm good for No Justice, right? He's like, yep. Do you want Justice League 2? I'm like, yeah. Do you want the other two Justice League titles? Yeah.
And so, like, I've been going through my list of things. Like, I might have to cancel some things because there's so much already coming. I was like, I can maybe cancel you, not you.
And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, okay, this is a miniseries that's ending. Doomsday Clock is only coming out every other month, so I don't really need to worry about you.
Super Sons is ending.
And that's going to be replaced by something else. I don't know if I want to read Teen Titans right now. I just don't know.
Decisions.
I'm going to read Titans. But it's just like... I don't know.
Again, Marvel will just cancel things for you.
Yeah, especially... Actually, I think Robbie Rodriguez said he might do one more arc on Spider-Gwen.
Sorry, man. Just one more. Just one more arc. That's all I need.
It's like, you know the reason why he's retiring, right?
No.
He has failing eyesight.
Oh.
So he really can't actually do his job as an artist at Marvel. Like, I think the trajectory was that Gwenom was going to be the last arc, so he can go out with a bang. Mm-hmm. But I think if rumors are true, you know, Gwen might be going by the wayside, that they're just going to do this one last story and just let the series live and die with Jason Latour and Robbie Rodriguez.
Which I'm fine with, to be honest.
Yeah. It'd be good. Oh, yeah. Here's the Hal Jordan killing himself.
Oh, and Booster watches.
Yeah.
Neat.
Oh, cool.
It's a... Here's the previous page. Just solo focus on Hal, and you see the ring light up.
Yeah, I don't like the smile.
It's a dystopian future where we need Jason Todd, the billionaire.
The pacifist.
So, just funny enough, Wutsuko220 on Reddit says, in a strange twist of fate, future Jason is actually a philanthropic billionaire that spends the majority of his time taking care of the poor and improving the lives of people in developing nations. In all seriousness, I would love to see a story where a future Robin was actually a very good person, instead of reinforcing that it's Batman that made them all great people. But to the same degree, that's the truth. Like, there's that Young Justice line, it's like, you recruited a child into your war on crime. Why? So he won't turn out like me. And it's like, get fucked, like, Wonder Woman.
Just, it's like, you just want him to be another you. It's like, no. It's so he won't be another me. Like, oh.
Batman never fires guns, Steve.
It was an air horn. Streamer.
Oh, you're going like this.
Yeah, I was going.
Oh, okay.
It's not like he's shooting the guns in the air like, oh, get fucked.
That's Jason.
Why did you bring a gun into a space station? Because I'm Batman. And you just got served. I have a knight.
Again, I feel it's cliche that the third Robin that has now become an evil Batman is using guns. And it's like, what kind of terrible future is this that all of the Robins have guns now?
Well, in the future, it's literally a warring... two Batman, Bat people militias fighting each other.
I would love if it was just like the simplest thing. Of like, how could this world go so wrong? How could Batman use guns? Well, they ran out of cinnamon at the diner.
Batwoman Batman stole the last donut on that Friday.
He knew I wanted cream filled.
How could she?
How dare they steal the eclair?
Booster! crap. Yeah, so everyone on Reddit too is very much like If we're going to do a future Batman with guns, why wouldn't it be Jason? We had future time Batman, Tim Mann, who used guns, and now we have future Dick Batman who uses guns. I know it's supposed to make us think what horrible future would drive these characters to it, but at this point, I don't think I would ever see Dick Grayson arm himself like this.
But Jason would.
And it's just very much like, but wait, this is a world Jason without
arms,
Batman.
Jason arms himself daily.
Got the bullet in my tooth, just in case, emergency bullets. And I'm really glad that in this latest arc of Superman, they have, it's the Bizarro world, that they have officially confirmed that old school Bizarro still exists.
What?
Like the square earth, flat earth Bizarro. And it's so terrible. Like, not terrible, but it's like, you know how all the Bizarro, they talk backwards.
Yeah. Me Bizarro.
Yeah. You make me mad. Me don't want to hug you. And they hug him. But even the onomatopoeia in the issue.
Just backwards.
It's like, instead of break, crash, it's like assemble. I'm just looking at this. I'm like, God. What kind of dream was this, Peter Tomasi? And Gleason's drawing. Dude, we're still not to Action 1000 yet. I just keep thinking.
Doesn't that come out this month?
Yep. Yeah, April 17th. But I'm just sitting here like, is it out yet? I remember reading the story in March that Tom King wrote. It should be out by now. But it's not. It's going to be tragic. I'm going to cry.
I'm sure.
Are you getting Action 1000? Part of the monumental events?
I don't know.
The Tom King story alone is worth it. Yeah. He's saying goodbye to Earth itself as it blows up. And it's just like, Nito. Ooh. Anyways.
All right. It's time.
Yeah, I guess like that's all the comic and news that we could find. So,
you're saying it's time.
It's time.
This morning, Steve and I went to go see A Quiet Place.
On a scale of 1 to butthole fully clenched, how anxious were you?
4. Yeah, I would go with a 4.
Well, where on the scale is butthole clenched?
That's like,
is that like 10. Replacing the 10?
That's 10? Like a full 10.
I would put it at maybe a 4.5, maybe a 5.
Like, again, we knew what we were going into. From the trailers, we were like, yeah, sound design the movie. It's very jarring. Like, the only sound are, like, faint whispers.
For the first 10 minutes, the only sounds are nature and then a toy.
And footsteps.
So you barely even hear those footsteps. It's like, it's because they're bare feet because shoes make a lot of noise. And so it's just you hear, like, slight tapping from the feet.
And they walk on sand. And then in the house, they walk on, like, patches.
Like, they pretty much went through and be like, all right, that floorboard will creak. That won't. So they painted a, like, step here sort of thing. And that that's the path they follow everywhere.
Did they explain how much time they had to prepare all this?
We see day 89, and then the movie takes place in day 474.
Oh, jeez.
So we don't know how much time before day 89. Apparently there was enough time for a lot. A lot. Well, no, I mean like when, because they show a lot of the things of like, because day 89 could be like when they first started showing up. Because they go through the movie, they show a lot of newspaper clippings of like soldiers fighting this, armor plating. Like it shows like all the discoveries.
Have you seen your
made.
Children? Missing posters.
It's like silence will save you. So it's, we don't know like how much time they've been doing this.
Okay.
Or if it's just been like day one, they were ready to go.
And it's really cool too. Like Krasinski directed and starred and helped with the screenplay. Not that there's much dialogue to begin with. Like the
screenplay is still like what's happening in the scene. Yeah. So.
Well, and the director's job is a lot more important on this one. Cause
yeah, definitely.
That's a lot of direction without dialogue.
It's like, all right, here's what's going to happen in this scene.
Yeah. And the daughter, so they didn't make this apparent in any of the trailers, but the daughter actually is deaf.
Like, and she's deaf in real life.
Yeah. The actress herself was deaf because Krasinski said he wanted someone who is actually disabled in this way to help direct the film so he can get a better understanding of the characters and their interactions and everything else.
Because they're essentially, more or less, they're like living as if they were deaths. Or not deaths, but death.
Yes. I'd say more mute. Because sound is the only warning they have.
Sure.
Which makes it so intense for the daughter. Because she has a cochlear implant, mm-hmm. but it doesn't work. So she is deaf. She doesn't hear them coming. She doesn't. The only warning she has about certain things is if someone reacts to it.
And like most monsters, they will trigger lights. So you get little flashing lights occasionally.
Like it's kind of like they have a built-in kind of like electromagnetic field. Because when they're close, the lights will flicker.
Hmm. You want to know the most fucked up part? So, Zach, how big is the family from the trailers?
4.
There were 5 at the beginning of the movie.
Well, actually, no, if you look at one of the trailers, they did show all 5.
Yeah, so there's...
Do they?
The final trailer has the 5th child. So there's a 4-year-old, a toddler, and he finds a toy. And the toy has batteries.
Well,
let's not real quick. Spoilers.
Spoilers for A Quiet Place. If you haven't seen it, and you do want to see it, stop now.
You should go watch it. It took box office weekend this weekend.
Stephen King had a rave review. And, hold on, my favorite review that I just found is from one, Mr. Ryan Reynolds. I've seen A Quiet Place 2 in 1 week. See this film. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt are my new parents. Congratulations, Ryan. Which John Krasinski responded, thank you, son. Your mother and I are so proud.
And Stephen King went on to say, this is a new style of horror movie, one for the ages. And Krasinski's, speechless on Twitter. It's just holy shit.
It's so fascinating, just the trajectory of,
Jim from The Office.
Not even that. It's horror movies used to be, the intro movies for directors. All right, if you can direct a horror and run a horror movie, you can do anything. Now it's, all these directors is we're still going to do that, but we're going to make it fucking good.
And
it's not this B-level crap.
Yeah, it's more so that if you do a horror movie, you have to do it right. Because again, most people go see an action movie, it's they can shut their brains off, suspend their disbelief for a little bit, enjoy themselves.
Guns, which, side note, Michael Bay was a part of this movie.
What? He was a producer.
Okay. Still.
There is one explosion.
The fucking opposite of Michael Bayisms.
One explosion in the whole movie, and that's from a firework. And so we're left oh, neat. They're part of it. Michael Bay.
Yeah. So the film was produced by Michael Bay, Andrew Form, and Brad Fuller.
I feel like Brad Fuller worked on the X-Men movies.
No, that's Brian.
Well, not directing, but I feel like he was attached to them in some way.
Brad Fuller, the reason why he's The Purge. He's been a producer. He actually teams up with Michael Bay on a lot of stuff, and basically all of his movies are horror films. So he's very much on that. Andrew Form, producer for Friday the 13th, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and The Purge. Platinum Dunes is the studio that developed this underneath. And that's actually underneath Paramount, and that's Michael Bay's studio.
And all the praise this movie is getting, it deserves it. They convey so much emotion through mostly sign language. I'd say there's what? No.
It fucked me up, man.
I was fucking crying to that. Oh, this is happening. What's he signing? My heart.
So,
do they use subtitles? I assume they use subtitles. Mm-hmm.
So the previous thing was that the youngest child, Bo, had this spaceship. He says, "We're gonna get out of here in a spaceship.
It's like a rocket. That's how we'll get away."
So the sister gives him the rocket back, and then Bo takes the batteries that Krasinski took out.
So he sees the toy, and he's like, "Everyone's freaking out." He grabs it, takes the batteries out. Says, "No,
too loud."
And as they're leaving, the kid's like, "Batteries, neat."
And you just see him, and then it's like, oh, whoa, and it's making the annoying sound from old toys.
And it's like, the sound design on just that part was so perfect, because it's like, all right, there they are, strolling through the woods. You know he has the rocket,
Near the end of the movie?
No, or this was the beginning. Okay. This is how it starts.
Oh, God.
And then...
They're walking, and you hear the natural ambiance cuts out, and then all of a sudden you hear... the spaceship noises and just that whole point of you know what's happening. It's like,
You know he's dead.
Oh, they're isolating just that, just to kind of hammer the point home of no sound.
And, yeah, it just really fucked you up because then a smash cuts to the title. But it, a lot of this movie kind of remind me of some of the brief sound design things from Baby Driver. Since one of the characters, I want to get her name right, Reagan, who's played by actual deaf actress Millicent Simmons, who also did another big movie pretty recently. But every time they do a cut to her and she's the point of view character, there's no sound. It's like the deafened
just fully
sound. Yeah.
Deaf. Yeah. It's like
kind of like in Baby Driver where he has tinnitus the entire time.
But like this one, it's like zero sound. The only thing you know about what's going on in the scene is what's happening in her general area. It's not like you hear the corn stalks snapping off the side. It's nothing, and then you see something come out of the corn stalks.
Yeah. So the big driving thing, too, between all the characters is that Reagan feels really guilty about Bo's death because she's the one who gave him back the spaceship, and she thinks it's created a rift between herself and her father, Lee, played by Krasinski. So they don't really have like a really close familial thing. She's, I would assume, almost a teenager at this point too. So it's very much just like teenage angst. And like he's spending the entire 400 some odd days trying to repair her cochlear implant and just keeps failing every single time.
Looking at textbooks of the human ear, they show later that he has a big pile of cochlear implants that he's trying different modifications on and
just to get her to hear again.
Right.
And like,
because you think about it, in that environment, that is very dangerous to be deaf because you don't know if you're making sound. You can't hear the aliens coming.
Right.
And that's what they play on of like, she can't hear it. And then it comes up behind her and she has no clue.
It happens like twice too. And it just fucks you up. And it does the same wonderful Cloverfield thing that you just don't ever see the monster up until you need to see it. So it's like
it keeps like the horror vibe, like because most horror movies, like once you see the monster, you start hacking things. Like okay,
yeah, like the suspense of the mystery is gone. Yeah. But you every now and again you see like the foot come down or a claw come into the scene, and that's it. And then when they want to introduce the next part of it, you'll see that part of the monster.
And it fucks you up, too, because it's the same scene from the final trailer where Krasinski and Noah Loop's character are walking, and then you see a man, and it pans down to his feet, and it's his dead wife, allegedly.
Mm.
And then he just looks at them and then just screams so he can die, and the monster just pounces. Like, it's the first full look you see of it, but it's just, like, that quick second, and it's just like, shit. This world.
It's like they're just waiting. They're just in the shadows, just waiting to pounce.
Because I would say what, in the movie, there's what, like 5 minutes of actual speaking dialogue?
And those 5 minutes are so important. Yeah.
And the rest like of it is just sign language. Like,
it's like, here's the exposition you need.
Like not had, even, no, it's not no, even it's exposition. Not exposition. It's character development.
Yeah, it's fill in the gaps of like, what is like their relationship feeling like? Because they have a scene where it kind of shows Bo and Lee, it seems their relationship is very strained.
Marcus. Is Bo's the youngest.
Is Bo the youngest? I thought Bo was the...
No, Noah Loop is Marcus. The one thing, too, they don't use any character name in the entire movie.
Like, if you didn't say the names, I would know I watched Krasinski, Emily Blunt.
Noah Loop.
The two children. Boy and girl.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you see their relationship is strained. It's like, all right, what's going on here? And then they use a later moment, like 10 minutes later, to kind of explain that, because there's not much that the sign language can just go to just like that. It's like they have to have that conversation. So it's like, look, I'm going to use this little time that we have to talk to you about this. Like, just to hammer the point home of, like, this is important. Focus.
And what's awesome, too, it's like, it does the best horror movie tropes of, like, oh, shit, everyone's safe now. And then something goes wrong. They invent like a soundproof bunker at one point.
Like they put thick paper mache over the walls. Mm-hmm. The one entrance they cover with a mattress. So it is soundproof because, like we said in the trailer, she's pregnant.
Right.
So they need a place for the baby.
God, it just fucks you up so much, though. It's like, oh, yeah, we're going to put the baby in the crib, which is the box, and then seal the box, and then the baby has a gas mask. Oh my
like, yeah, God. Like they're setting it, like it's they do so a good terrible. Job like, of setting it up beforehand of like, look, she made the crib. Why is she bringing an oxygen tank over? Why does the crib have a lid? And then when you actually get all the pieces put together, you're like, oh, this is what they have to do to survive.
So there's so much in this movie. It's not even like the constant anxiety or tension, but it's like it does the perfect horror movie trope of like you see one small thing happen and you know it's going to happen later. It's like the Chekhov gun approach.
It's like it reminds me of like how you've seen the scene of everybody's like they know the monster's there and they're just like, shh. No, let's just make that the whole fucking premise of them.
It's so
in the corner, like, cowering the whole time.
Yeah, because they're in the safe room. Safe room gets exposed. The monster's in there.
Oh my God.
And it's just like they're in the water and the baby's in there. And it's just like, fuck. Like,
and then they take that moment to introduce a new attribute of the monster that it's amphibious.
Oh my God.
Or that it has amphibious capabilities because it's walking around and all of a sudden goes right under the water.
So wait, are these monsters pretty small then?
No, they're larger than humans.
They're how about much the water size are you of our
it's like it was
chest weight.
Yeah,
but like, is I'd it like waist how high much or, water? Is it like a tub?
No, it's like it's in a,
if
a
our
whole,
basement flooded yeah, to the it, chest it, level.
Like okay, if this room okay. were to be filled with water up to kind of like
wait,
waist.
Why is there so much water in this room?
They left a.
They broke a water tank.
Ah,
and so it was just kind of overflowing into the which the water tank was right over the.
But every small thing that happens in this movie has a purpose, just like in Get Out, which I really appreciate. Like, for a 90-minute film, oh my God, that seems really short in this day and age. But, like, even Marcus being in the car at the beginning of the film, pretending to drive, pays off at the end. Or just, like, all the different systems they have in place, like the red lights, like the soundproofing, like them covering the wall in paper mache, like... Every small detail matters.
Well, and they have one scene where at first you think, oh, it's just a nice father-son bonding thing where the kid is, you know, of course, freaked out about the whole world.
Yeah.
And so he takes
his brother die. Yeah,
he takes him to a river where makes a little noise and kid freaks out. It's like, no,
you're fine.
There's a louder noise. You're fine. And
like,
then
it's like this noise is already there.
Right.
Like,
and then he takes him to a waterfall and shows him like you can shout as loud as you want. They won't come. And you think, oh, that's a nice father-son bonding moment. They use that later when the basement is flooded. In one part, there's essentially where the water's coming down. It's like a waterfall that Emily Blunt can hide behind and the monster won't know it's there. So it's kind of like a connective thing of like if she just did that normally, like, what's going on? But because they had that
they really,
scene
it's
explaining
like they made
it,
sure they're like tie up all the loose ends. So there's like, when they have made noise there, it's like, no. We have this covered. We have, there's a reason for it.
Like they said, they did a good job of covering a lot of bases of like, well, what if they did
like,
this?
Here's all, it was like, they made sure of like, here's the rules. We're going to stick to them. You know what they are. There's not going to be anything like new. That's like, oh, here's a loophole.
Yeah. And those are my favorite kinds of horror movies that have the strict rules.
And they stick
like,
to them like, like Cabin in the Woods. It's like, it's like, okay, here's this game of they're going to play around with the tropes and they're going to stick to that.
And then the evil spirit turned into a frog. And
we have cleansed the spirit. Yay! But like, when I first saw the trailer and they revealed it was a monster, like an alien, it's like, well, why don't they just like shoot it or use a tank or something? And then they show a newspaper clipping of armor plating, guns ineffective. I'm like, all right, that answers that.
All right.
It fucks you up so much. Like, I won't say the big turn reveal of how they defeat the monsters, but it's very much like...
You should tell me once we're done.
Yeah, it's very much like, oh, okay. You're like, that makes perfect sense.
Well, and they do a nice job of, through the movie, kind of hinting at this will be the solution.
Mm-hmm.
I have a guess of what it is.
It's very worth seeing. It's not even like Steve and I at one point are like, we both hoods up just staring, like it's our coping mechanism.
Well, it's like at one point Emily Blunt enters a certain like a room, and like as soon as she stands in one area, I'm like, oh no, I know what's gonna happen. put up.
Yeah, the most stressful part of the entire film, I would say, is Emily Blunt's character story, where she is pregnant. She mm-hmm. is due to give birth. And it's just like, how the fuck is she going to do this? Wonderful film, though. Like, it's not even scary. Like, the jump scares are...
It's tense, though.
Yeah, it's tense.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things of, like, when is something going to go
wrong? The fucking lamp still got me. I knew the goddamn lamp was there. Saw the trailers.
I do love all the stories of people. There was... Who was it? I want to say it was, like, Miles Luna or someone. Someone from Rooster Teeth. They were like... when everybody was leaving Get Out, a server dropped... Or not Get Out. A Quiet Place. A server dropped a metal pen and everybody turned to it in like horror.
No noise.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you know like a horror movie did its fucking job.
It's a very good movie. I wouldn't say it's an absolutely terrifying movie. It's a slightly tense movie because, again, it's one of those things of like something can easily go wrong. When's it going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
And it has the jump scares in there just to kind of keep you on your toes. But it's a very good emotional movie too. Like, they convey so much emotion without saying a word until probably like 45 minutes in.
I would say Emily Blunt's arc is scary and terrifying because, again, it's the whole pregnancy thing and something happens to her that's just like, fuck. And then, but the one thing that drove me crazy, I probably can never watch this in the theaters again, because the first like 10 minutes of the film, I hear people chewing and I'm just like, I hear popcorn rustling. I'm like, I swear to God, if I hear the stupid straw noise in someone's drink.
So the people next to me, they had popcorn, just like, it's like, and all I hear is...
Just because it's so quiet. It's
and
like,
someone brought a goddamn fussy baby.
Yeah, someone actually brought their child.
Like we're sitting here. This? Like, at the first time I heard the baby, I was like, I sitting there and all I hear is... Like, is there a baby in this scene? Like, what's going on? And then I hear, it's like, oh, it's just a fussy baby.
Yeah. I'm trying to find anything worth
they Reddit, did. But... They did a good job of... Because, you know, usually horror movies, there's the trope of someone's got to be the person in distress. Mm-hmm. Like, the damsel in distress. And they did a good job of making Emily Blunt's character in no way a damsel in distress.
She gets shit done.
She knows what the fuck shit, we're doing.
Like, she knows exactly what to do. Like, she sees one thing and is like, all right, I've got a plan now. Does not rely on anybody until, of course, she gives birth. And the fuck are you going to do right after you give birth?
Yeah. So the big thing that came about, too, with this movie, that a lot of people notice similarities between these monsters and Clover. So this article is coming from IO9, and it's coming from IO9, but it was originally reported by Slash Film. With the screenplay writers Brian Woods and Scott Beck. And when they first optioned the movie, it was actually at one point under consideration to be roped into the Cloverfield universe. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Paramount kind of has like their classic CG monster with Clover. It's the same texture, too, mm-hmm. of the monster.
Reuse assets.
It's cheaper.
But they do a very nice job of kind of making it an individual, too.
Yeah.
Like, it has the same kind of frame. But they change up the claws, they change up the legs, the head is completely different. Like,
are we thinking like kind of like the Xenomorph look? Because that's what I've been picturing the whole time.
No, it's...
Imagine Clover, but with the Demogorgon's head.
Okay.
Bipedal? Have you seen Pan's Labyrinth?
Quad pedal.
Yes.
Do you know the guy who has the eyes in his hands? Picture that kind of head that will kind of then open up into a sort of Demogorgon thing.
Okay. Its entire head opens in like 10 different places and they're all ear canals. It's disgusting.
Huh. Like that's how it hears so well, is it opens up all these different channels that can hear in different areas.
Yeah. So the screenwriters go on to say that, again, this is a report from Slash Film, about how Quiet Place could have been one of those movies. Scott goes, I know that was one of the things that I guess it crossed our minds and we had spoken to our representatives about the possibility. It was weird timing though, because when we were writing the script, 10 Cloverfield Lane was at Paramount. We were actually taken to an executive there about this film and it felt from the pitch form there might be a crossover. But when we finally took the final script to Paramount, they saw it as a totally different movie. What was really incredible about the process that we feel very grateful for is that the studio embraced this weird movie with no dialogue, with open arms. They never thought about it branding as a Cloverfield film, but I think in part because of the conceptuality it was able to stand on its own. Brian goes on to say, and our biggest fear was, we love Bad Robot, we obviously love the people over there, and obviously JJ is certainly a hero to us, but our biggest fears was this was getting swept up into some kind of franchise or repurposed for something like that. The reason I say biggest fear, we love the Cloverfield movies, they're excellent, it's just that as filmgoers we crave new and original ideas, and we feel like so much of what's out there is IP. It's comic books, it's remakes, it's sequels, we show up to all of them, we enjoy those movies too, but our dream was always to drop something different into the marketplace, so we feel grateful that Paramount embraced the movie as its own thing. So, I know.
Thank you. Happy. We need more of those people.
But again, like, it was a good horror movie. Like, I don't see them too often just because I'm just like, oh, yeah, just shoot through dare.
Shoot through dare.
Yeah. Just like, I mean, Traffic looks like kind of interesting. It looks like The Strangers almost, both human trafficking instead.
Yeah.
But
actually, no, that's not Traffic. Wait, no, that was Traffic. I'm thinking of the, what's the Benicio Del Toro and
Josh Brolin? Oh, Sicario 2?
Yeah, Sicario.
Which, 2.
Which, yeah. When okay. The trailer finished, I just turned to Zach. I'm like, man, it sucks that the Collector and Thanos are at war with the Mexican cartel.
I was going to say BJ from Last Jedi. I mean, the entire film was just cool. And it's, I mean, major props to freaking Jim Halpern from The Office. Just like, again, he's gone from the comedic dude to... I think this is directorial debut, other than like doing a couple is. Episodes on The Office.
I think he's maybe. Done some other directing.
I think he did 27 Hours.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did.
Or, but
was it 27 Hours? He was the Benghazi really cool. story.
And now he's our... So from Jim from The Office, which is still his picture on Wikipedia, to now being... the action hero is so bizarre to me.
So he went from...
Oh, I didn't actually know he was married to Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. He directed The Hollers, and he also directed Brief Interviews with Hideous Men, and then he directed A Quiet Place. But can you imagine, like, again, everyone saying... John Krasinski and Emily Blunt are my new parents. They have two children of their own. Just imagine like the emotions they feel are just as real in that film.
Well, and I'm pretty sure John Krasinski made this happen, but when look through the credits, Zach mentioned like, oh, they gave Emily Blunt top billing. Like, man, sucking up to his wife. I'll give you top billing, honey.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, I just can't get over how cool it was. And again, because when we saw that first movie trailer, I'm like, yep, I'm going to go see this. This is my kind
of
film.
And I saw it, I'm like, nope, I physically will not be able to handle that. Like, the trailer just made me so fucking
anxious. So I feel, to kind of put your mind at ease, Dunkirk made my butthole clench more than this film did. I think it's just because there's monsters in this movie might freak you out a little bit more than, you know, the Second World War.
Yeah.
And you survived Dunkirk.
Yeah,
because
it's like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I didn't have too much trouble Dunkirk. I jumped at a couple scenes because it's always just the sudden loud noise that makes me jump.
The entire film.
But, not the entire film, but like the fucking boat scene. Yeah. Where it's just like, oh god, I know they're going to get shot at.
Bang. Bay Styles, no.
Don't look at the hole. Why are you fucking looking at the hole again?
So I think we need to, like, because you keep saying you want to actually watch Get Out. We need, like, baby step you into it. I would say this is a good movie to baby step into Get Out.
Really? I thought Get Out wasn't really that... It was more of a thriller more than a horror.
It's just as tense, I feel. Mm.
Fucking white people.
All right, so we watched Dunkirk, A Quiet Place, Get Out.
And then Zach dies from anxiety attacks.
Yeah.
It was just a fantastic movie. Like, everyone who's saying, like, this is probably the best movie of the year so far, I would be inclined to agree. Like, just from the direction of the movie, like the sound design, the acting direction, how this is kind of it's a big step forward for movies concerning deaf people.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's the thing out there, like, should subtitles be added to movies in theaters for the hearing impaired audience? People are like, oh, no, I don't want to watch a movie that's all
Don't they have, like, closed caption viewings?
There are, but there's a movement by the deaf community to get it on all showings.
Hmm.
Which...
I'd be there.
You know, everyone's...
I don't mind it.
But... Everyone's like, oh, it'd be so distracting, and, like, I don't think I want captions on my movies. Like, what about this movie? This movie was 90% caption. It's like, it is a big step forward of, like, look, you can have a movie that doesn't have dialogue, just subtitles,
and it can still be tell fantastic. A story. Yeah.
Tell a better story than a lot of movies that have been coming out recently.
Truth or dare. We keep seeing trailers, and it just
it just looks bad.
They keep expanding with the trailers of, like, you're not helping yourself, truth or dare.
Just making us...
It's a Snapchat filter currently.
Oh, God.
Truth or dare. Does it make your eyes all big and bug-eyed?
Yeah.
I'm just like, that is some of the worst CG I've seen in a while.
I like two of your actors in this movie, but then they just...
fucking Lucy Hale in it?
In the trailer, they even go, it's like, I choose truth. That's not how it works. And I'm like...
The game decides for you.
It's like, then what's the fucking point? You're just killing people.
Truth or dare.
And it's like, I dare you to jump off this tape. Or
He's like, I dare you to pull out your...
Dick.
Yeah, your dick. And he's like... And then you hear, like, someone in the background go, like, I've already seen it. Not that big of a deal. He's like, fine, whatever. And then, like, as he's going to step down, he comes back up with the big eyes, slips on an 8-ball, and snaps his neck on another pool table.
And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, oh, God, this is the final destination for this generation.
Like, when I first saw the show, I was like, he gets impaled on a pool cue, because they kind of show one pointing up like that, and like, he gets impaled. Nope, snaps his neck on another pool table. Like, well, all right, then.
Okay.
See another person, and it's like, you gotta break my hand. It's like, I don't want you to die.
It's like, I'm mad at you, but I think I can do it right now. You gotta do it.
Oh my God, there's a fucking anime like this. What is it called?
Truth or Dare.
Oh, it's called the King's Game, I think.
Oh yeah, that came out in the winter season. The premise is kind of like a combination of Truth or Dare and Future Diary.
Yeah, King's Game. Yeah, that's what it's called.
I've
seen so many fucking clips from it, and it's so bad, it's hilarious.
Well, like, because they're playing on the Japanese game of King's Game, where they did it in Persona 4, where they have the sticks, and one of them is the King stick, and they get to tell the other person whatever they want. It's like, the King decrees you must do this.
But it's like, they twist into, like, a Final Destination thing.
If you don't obey the King's orders, you die.
Some of the dub lines are like Ghost Stories level of just bad. There's one scene in it where it's like, you have to have sex with him, but I don't want to. It's like, you'll die otherwise, and they knock him out. It's like, do it while he's asleep.
Oh.
But just the way they enunciate it is like, oh my God.
I just tuned out of the conversation for like 5 seconds, and I'm just now like,
I'll have to show you.
It kind of sounds like,
no, I'm good.
The Dragon Ball Z Big Green dub.
Yeah, it's so
bad.
Let
that child alone.
Hilarious.
The Quiet Place.
Anyway, to end on that one.
Yeah. Just, what the hell, man? I'm trying to think if there's any other movies worth watching in April.
I mean, Super Troopers coming up.
I need Infinity to Wars the end of the month.
I'm so fucking excited for Super Troopers too.
Battle Angel Alita coming out anytime soon.
I think it might be, actually. I don't know. Again, maybe it will be good. Just the animation's the worst part of it.
So we can't send Steve. So he tries to find good in all movies. So we'll send
I don't know if I could find good in that movie.
Oh, no, it's not coming out until like later in the year. Because it's December 21st
We saw Star Wars and that trailer came on, I was horrified from second one when they showed her eyes. I'm like,
stare into
your soul.
Oh, no.
Be gone, demon.
It's like, it's Robert Rodriguez, so it could be good.
It could be good, and then you see that CG on the one person.
Oh, no.
Hey, man, look, if Ready Player One turned out to be a decent movie, I can hope for a lot of other movies to do so.
Again, and we don't know yet. It could surprise us. It's like, yeah, the CG's is really as bad as we think it is, but everything else is great.
It's like the eyes follow you anywhere you are in the room.
Just oh, no, we're going to watch Avengers. That's the other April movie.
Yeah. April 27th.
All right. I think that's it.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening to your brand new episode of the Z2 Podcast. We love and adore each and every one of you.
Oh, I didn't check the comments and see if anyone actually... My bad.
While I was actually looking at the comments, be sure to always hit us up. We are very active on our Twitter, our Facebook, as well as...
Z2Podcast.com/comment, which I'm checking right now.
And we also try and read any review that comes our way. If it's a thumbs up, if it's 5 stars, either or, you can hit us up and we will read your comment live on air.
Boo, no one.
Tim, you said you were going to. Dr. Doom sucks. Prove me wrong in the comment.
This is not helping.
Prove me wrong in the comment, Tim.
If you too think Dr. Doom sucks, or if you think Dr. Doom is the god everyone else thinks he is, please comment at
z2podcast.com/comment.
And we can talk about it. Or, for even more exciting debates, who's better, Barry Allen or Wally West? I will talk.
Or Bart Allen.
Bart dies in his 12-issue run as The Flash. He was murdered. And then we got
the only version that's been good is the Young Justice one.
And the actual Young Justice one by Peter David. Look, it gave us the best Wally scene ever, where he takes inertia, steals his Speed Force from him, and leaves him as a statue in the Flash Museum. And he's aware of every single thing. Oh, and it's that's kind brutal. Of where the trope of "and I must scream" comes from. And I'm like, fuck, Wally, don't mess around. Barry Allen, you can't steal the Speed Force from people. Fuck you.
He can now, though.
I know. Just he learned it from Wally. All right. Thank you guys for listening. I don't think there's anything else. Comment, like us. Check out our YouTube channel. I don't know if that's still around.
It's around. We haven't done anything with it.
Hey, if our Let's Play start getting more popular, maybe we'll do more.
Maybe we'll get taken down by Nintendo. We can only hope. Goodbye, Internet, and go see A Quiet Place.